dude's name. He gave me a book badge. I'm scared.
Mr. Loftus, I believe you have yet a matter for the commission.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. My understanding is that Commissioner Calk has some additional questions for Ms. Laura McCartan, so I would like to recall Ms. McCartan to the witness stand, please.
All right. Ms. McCartan, again, you understand, of course, that your testimony continues under oath and subject to penalties of perjury.
I do.
Mr. Loftus.
Thank you. Your Honor, I tender the witness for any additional questions.
And I understand those are questions by Commissioner Calk. Commissioner Calk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Laura. Just over lunch, I was just a couple candid questions, I guess. Is the we talked previously about reliability. And, you know, the overall reliability plan, I think that's in the settlement agreement, there's a lot of it that makes sense. But, you know, I've talked a lot about, you know, maybe some more people in certain areas, which got me to thinking about, is there something in the settlement agreement that has more weight or other than others that would be a deal breaker if it was included or wasn't included? And,
now, you know, attending.
Your thoughts about that, because I'd just like to hear what you have to say on that.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. I guess my thought on the settlement is that it stands as a complete package where all of the pieces work together and all of the pieces are kind of dependent upon the other pieces. I think that the ROE was a very important piece of that. The aggregate settlement of, as was mentioned, 85% of the advocacy staff recommendations, the non-ROE recommendations, without saying what they were and kind of considering that a black box, I think is an important piece of the whole. The treatment in the 2012 step-in for the true-up, all of these, I think, work as a package. The recovery of the Minot O&M costs and the ability to recover the capital investment in the rate in base rates, all of these, I think, strike a balance amongst what the company's needs are to be able to be healthy and continue to invest in the company in the assets that are needed to serve our customers, and are also mindful and I think responsive to customers' needs and interests, and to what the commission is trying to achieve. So I would be very hard-pressed to try to pull any one piece of that out and say this is the most important piece of that settlement, because it all works together as a package.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had, Your Honor.
Mr. Loftus, well, I'm sorry, you have yet another matter, Mr. Loftus. Proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. McCartan, with regard to the settlement agreement, and in light of the discussions earlier today, do you have any statements to make at this time?
Yes, thank you. I would like to speak, excuse me, in response to the commissioner's discussion this morning regarding the proposed billing credit mechanism, and also to Mr. Gopper's recommendation regarding reporting of outages that affect 25 or more customers. And with respect to these two issues, I'd like to offer the following possible revision to the settlement agreement. First, with respect to outages affecting customers at six or more in a calendar year, we would propose to provide annual reports of exactly that data of customers who experience six or more qualified outages during a calendar year. Second, we would be open to, as I think was suggested in some discussion earlier this morning, not going following through with the payment of the $50 bill credit to customers who experience those six or more outages. And finally, we would propose that in addition to the reporting that I just noted, which is customers who experience six or more qualified outages, we would, in addition to that, retain the existing reliability reporting that is in place today. That includes the real-time reporting of feeder-level outages, the annual reports of area reliability performance, et cetera, as was outlined by Dave Cedarquist, that we keep it at that and not expand it to include reporting on an ongoing basis outages that affect 25 or more customers as per Mr. Gopper's proposal. And here's my reasoning behind that approach on those issues. First, we agree there is value in tracking and reporting on customers who experience six or more outages. We think this sort of information can reveal trends that then can be useful to the commission and to the company to identify potentially localized issues or problem areas that need special additional attention. So we agree that tracking is valuable and can ultimately help improve reliability performance. Well, we also acknowledge the concerns expressed this morning that the payment of the bill credit perhaps is maybe not in keeping with the approach that the commission might prefer. And if the commission decides that they don't want to go to the payment of the bill credits for customers who experience six or more qualified outages, we would accept that. If the commission decides you do want to have those bill credits made but really don't want that to be part of the recovery, we would be agreeable to that as well. Finally, with respect to Mr. Gauber's proposal, we believe that that would create a fairly significant administrative burden without the commensurate value of helping us improve reliability performance. With a system as large and as many customers as we have here, it's not a 100% reliable system. We think we have very high reliability performance, but nonetheless, you could experience outages that affect 25 or more customers. There could be many of those in the course of a year. We don't have an exact number, but it could be perhaps up in the area of 1,000 per year. That's a lot per day. And the question then is that useful information towards the purpose of trying to improve reliability performance? In my opinion, it's not. It's a lot of data. It won't necessarily reveal any trends, whereas the other reporting we think would reveal some trends that could be actionable towards improving reliability performance. So in summary, what I'm proposing, I believe, achieves the proper balance for data that is useful to the commission and to the company in assessing and improving reliability performance. And that was what I wanted to add.
Mr. Loftus, anything further?
Your Honor, I have nothing further. Thank you.
Mr. Groom, oh, Your Honor, for the witness. Does Jeff Coates Sacco?
None, thank you.
Questions from the commission?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Our discussion earlier about how many linemen in Minot and how many in Fargo,
yes.
Would you be agreeable to adding two more linemen in Fargo?
At this point, I would not be agreeable to doing that. I think that all the other things we've talked about, we can tie back to really fundamentally either meeting a business need or clearly getting us to a performance level that we need to be at. And we believe we do have the right staffing level in Fargo at this point, along with, as I mentioned before, contract augmentation or other augmentation that's necessary for demanding situations.
Thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Mr. Loftus, follow up?
I have none, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman.
No, Your Honor.
Jeff Coates-Sacco.
Nothing, thanks.
Thank you very much. Mrs. McCart.
It's
sorry. Anything further, Mr. Loftus?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman.
Obviously, staff calls Mike Diller.
Mr. Diller, as you well know, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I am required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period up to 5 years or both. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Diller, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Mr. Groom.
Thank you. Can you please state your name for the record?
Mike Diller, D-I-L-L-E-R.
And what's your job title here?
The PSC? Director of Economic Regulation.
In summary, what are your duties for the PSC?
My primary duties involve managing rate cases, overseeing advanced determination of prudence cases, mergers and acquisitions, haven't seen that for a while, but annual reporting requirements, annual reviews, those types of things.
Thank you. What is the purpose of your testimony today?
I'm here to support the settlement agreement.
And why does staff support the settlement agreement?
Well, first, I believe that a fully litigated case will result in higher rates to North Dakota ratepayers than have been achieved through the settlement agreement. Secondly, I believe the settlement agreement is fair and reasonable. I think the settlement agreement is fairly creative and efficient and disposing of the issues of the cases. My prepared testimony will be brief and fixated primarily upon the issues of return on equity, the black box settlement of expense and rate-based adjustments, reliability of service, the Department of Energy settlement, and the requested review of the Power Sector Regulations Project.
Why does staff support a 10.4% return on equity for calculating revenue requirements?
We agreed to support the 10.4% ROE for a number of reasons. First of all, it represents a downward movement in comparison to the returns that the Commission has been authorizing in recent decisions. Secondly, the ROE agreed to in this settlement is lower than any return authorized by the Commission since at least 1977, and that's as far back as my records go. Third, it's representative of what other commissions are authorizing around the country. Fourth, it's within a few basis points, if you want to compare what we've done here to the Department of Commerce. It's within a few basis points of what the DOC is currently arguing in its rebuttal testimony before the Minnesota Commission.
Aside from ROE, how were the remaining issues raised in staff's pre-filed testimony resolved?
The parties agreed to a black box settlement accepting 85% of staff's expense and rate-based adjustments. The agreement was black box to fully protect the positions of the parties with respect to each issue, and then in the event that the settlement agreement is not accepted by the Commission. I have reviewed our case and believe the black box settlement represents a best case scenario in a fully litigated instance. Staff cannot reasonably expect to win every issue it has raised in its pre-filed testimony, and therefore agreed to accept 85% of our adjustments, or a reduction to NSP's revenue requirement of approximately $1.6 million.
Please describe why additional dollars are provided for in the settlement relating to the reliability of electric service.
NSP has had reliability issues over the past few years, as can be seen in complaints received by the Commission as well as reported reliability indices. As a result, I traveled to Fargo to meet with NSP's engineers to see if we couldn't develop an approach to attain higher levels of reliability in North Dakota. NSP was well prepared with the information I had requested and, for the most part, had a solution worked out before I arrived, for which I was very appreciative. Outages cannot be avoided altogether. There is no amount of money or duplication of facilities that would assure the deliverability of electricity 100% of the time. Storms happen, accidents happen, facilities deteriorate and need to be fixed or even replaced. The challenge, then, in addressing reliability is determining what level of duplication is warranted and what amount of money are we willing to spend to improve it. During the last 4 years, underground cable faults have caused about 22% of the customer minute outages in North Dakota. The total miles of underground cable comprise about 35% of NSP's wires and lines. While underground wiring is preferable to builders and homeowners for safety and aesthetic purposes, it cannot be viewed for weaknesses or potential faults. Today, technology does not exist that would foretell of possible faults to underground electric cabling. Accordingly, the current maintenance program related to underground cable is to repair it when an isolated fault occurs and replace it when multiple faults occur. I ask NSP to estimate what it would cost to replace underground cable on a 20-year cycle. The results indicate a 2-3% annual increase in rates would be necessary if applied socially across all ratepayer classes, or about three times that if assessed only to the users of underground electric cable. I believe the cost of this rotational replacement is too high and instead prefer that NSP simply abide by its existing guidelines to replace lines with multiple fault occurrences in a timely manner. The next main cause of outages in recent years has been breaker failures. Breakers are significant investments and can cost upwards of $1 million. As a result, rotational cyclical replacement without regard to each breaker's useful life would be expensive. NSP is deploying a new method by which it takes a sample of the oil from the breaker to try and predict the end life of the breaker rather than relying on visual inspections. I don't pretend to understand the chemistry behind it, but given the cost of these units, I believe this new method of predicting end life through chemical analysis should be given a chance before ever considering replacing these things on a cyclical basis. Another significant contributor to customer outages is vegetation disturbances. Trees, like grass, grow a lot when water is available. North Dakota has been on a wet cycle for several years, and more tree trimming is necessary. Therefore, we agreed to add a tree trimming crew to the four crews currently operating in North Dakota at a cost of $212,000 per year. The effects of this program will not be seen immediately, but over the long run should improve reliability. In summary, underground cable faults, failed breakers, and vegetation interference accounted for more than 50% of NSP's customer minute outages over the past 4 years. The most significant solution offered for improved reliability comes from a more macro view of trying to minimize the impact of large outage events by installing smart switches throughout the Fargo area. The specifics of the program are described in Laura McCartan's pre-filed testimony. We've talked about it quite a bit today already, and no elaborations needed here other than to say that I'm in agreement with deploying the smart switches.
Mr. Diller, have you reviewed NSP's petition for approval of a credit mechanism for the Department of Energy settlement referenced in the settlement agreement, and what have you concluded?
Under the Nuclear Waste Policy Act, the federal government has been collecting one-tenth of a penny per kilowatt hour for all nuclear energy generated since 1982, resulting in the collection of more than $30 billion. That's a fairly old number. I think that's a 2009 number. But to dispose of the nation's spent nuclear fuel beginning no later than January 31, 1998. To date, the DOE has not accepted any spent nuclear fuel and has discontinued the development of a deep geological repository at Yucca Mountain in the state of Nevada. DOE has spent more than $13 billion on Yucca Mountain with little or no progress towards the development of a functioning repository. As NSP's filing shows, NSP has been suing the federal government for breach of contract for more than a decade, spending nearly $7 million in outside legal fees and other litigation expenses. The DOE settlement for the years before and ending in 2008 represents recovery of about one-fourth of the costs incurred by NSP because the federal government failed to provide a national repository. The DOE settlement does not remove DOE's obligation to provide a repository and establishes a framework for additional payments to NSP through 2014. The settlement agreement will result in a very quick and efficient one-time credit plus interest net of litigation costs for the first of these payments received in August 2011. The credit will be combined with the interim rate refund and offset by the Minot flood expenses as shown on Table 2, page 11 of the settlement agreement.
Diller, have you reviewed the article forwarded by the Commission advisors in Exhibit 22 related to the Power Sector Regulations Project? And if you have, what have you determined?
I have. The Power Sector Regulations Project has not been operating long enough to have any impact on the rates being determined in this proceeding. That said, it is definitely something that we should monitor since our interests are often impacted by what NSP is doing in Minnesota and the regulatory decisions of Minnesota. The decisions reached in the project may indeed impact future rate proceedings. Generally speaking, the goals outlined by NSP for participating in the project, labeled Exhibit 22, are reasonable. To better inform the EPA, to minimize costs of complying with the so-called train wreck, to build consensus and understanding, to influence federal policymakers, hopefully that's for the good, and to try and get credit for proactive green initiatives before green was hip or before green was required. That said, aggressive environmental institutions appear to be driving the project, which makes me pause and wonder if minimizing costs to consumers will be sacrificed in the name of consensus and more regulatory burden to ratepayers and consumers. It's too early to tell where the pilot project of EPA is headed, but I remain very cautious and skeptical.
Thank you, Mr. Diller. Your Honor, I have no further questions.
Mr. Loftus.
Your Honor, the company has no questions at this time. Thank you.
Ms. Jeffcoat, second.
Mike, the only question that I have, and I understand the reason for the black box settlement, but often some of the staff's recommended adjustments are due to an accounting process or an allocation process that staff thinks is a better process or method than the company is using. And I just wondered if the company has made any adjustments that staff may have found and recommended in its investigation of this case. Has the company agreed to change, for example, how it allocates for something or the accounting method that it uses? Or are those all still just open questions for the next rate?
Well, we certainly explored those things on a number of fronts, both on a macro and a micro level. You've already talked a little bit about the pole attachments. On the macro level would be considering whether or not we should allocate costs on a jurisdictional basis based on 12CP or some other method. So the allocation of costs is always an issue in a rate case. We've not established any kind of precedent or changed any rules as part of this settlement agreement.
And are you comfortable that there with that, and sometimes staff will have some going forward revisions to that process that the company may agree to, even if it doesn't affect the numbers. Are you comfortable that there are no pressing issues of that regard that need to be dealt with now?
I don't believe so.
Thank you.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Thanks for your testimony, Mike. Turning to Exhibit 27, which is the levelized annual revenue requirement factor, which is the table related to the questions regarding the reasonableness of the $250,000 revenue requirement for the Intelli team switches. Are you comfortable with that number given the...
Yeah. Actually, I didn't know this schedule existed. I didn't know that it was actually based on anything.
I kind of say that
cavalierly, but when you're in a settlement negotiation, you're not paying attention to necessarily the hundreds of dollars, but trying to capture the thousands and the ten thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars. And my quick analysis of the $250,000 was, okay, it's going to cost $2.5 million. What's a return on $2.5 million if it's 10%? $250,000. Then you add on taxes to that, and you're upwards of $400,000+. You add depreciation to that. They're going to have to buy these switches early in 2012. And so basically what you have is a half-year convention here of $250,000 or close to it. So I'm very comfortable with that. They're going to have the money invested for all practical purposes most of the year. So seemed like an easy choice to me.
Okay. Thanks. That's all I have.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Kramer.
Mike, one of the signals I tried to send early in the process, in fact, I think it was even reported after the public input meetings in one of the news outlets, is the question of jurisdictional allocation. And this really became a question for me when in the last MDU case, as they testified to peak. And all that, and it was testified earlier by somebody—I forget which witness—that North Dakota and Minnesota's climate is pretty similar, and in actuality, it's quite different considering how close our proximity is geographically. heating degree days are considerably higher in Fargo, for example, than Minneapolis. Did staff consultants dig into allocation, jurisdictional allocation, much? And if so, why should I be comfortable that we're still having the right, we're operating under the right jurisdictional threshold, given that I sense that the peak, the summer peak that XL operates under, it may not be reflective of North Dakota.
That's a very fair and good question, Commissioner Kramer. As you're asking this, I'm thinking, boy, I have a lot to say about this, but would NSP use this against me in the future? But they're probably more in tune with the facts anyway than I am even, so I'll go ahead and answer that fully. yes, part of the reason we hired Blue Ridge Consulting was they had a very good engineer on staff that was in tune with this very thing. And he ran a lot of tests that are basically not required by FERC, but they're FERC tests. FERC has established a number of tests to do to see if 12 CP is really the appropriate factor to use. And after his analysis, basically what he told me was, Mike, they meet every test. And 12 CP is about as good as you can expect for a jurisdictional allocation factor. I suspect they know that already. I didn't really want to admit it to them. But that's just one. But I'll say this. That's just one expert. Next time when I'm doing the case, my opinion might be different. But that's, yes, we did look at it very hard.
Okay. You heard a lot of discussion already about Mr. Gopper's recommendations as far as stipulations. You even heard a willingness by the company to stipulate to some things that aren't in the...
We'll take it.
Yeah, okay.
But you probably have more questions. I'm sorry.
Well, no, that's basically it. But that my question would have been, you know, realizing you haven't had a time to, or maybe you have, to collaborate on this. I mean, would you have a problem from an advocacy?
Well, I will share the solution I came up with driving in from the country this morning. So it's a little bit of a variation, but I was trying to figure out, you know, how can we best prevent the Larry Gopper situations from occurring again. And you know, I have a copy of the underground cable replacement guidelines, and I think they're very good, and you've already heard their witness talk about them. If you have two outages on a segment and within 2-year period of time, you replace it. Now, I suspect, I didn't confirm this, I haven't talked to any of them, but I suspect that if we had got on that right away when Larry Gopper's segment had two faults, maybe he wouldn't be testifying to us today. So to me, if you really want to, you know, if you really want to zero in on that solution, maybe instead of reporting 25, whenever customers are out 25 times, or even an annual report of more than 6 outages, maybe you have them report annually, so that we can look at the time frame that it takes between when the policy is in play and when you actually get boots on the ground and get out there and get the thing replaced. To me, I like that, and it's more manageable. We don't want 1,000 notices from NSP every time 25 people are out of service. We have a small staff, and when you do that, it loses its significance. And so... that's my drive-in solution that I had this morning. So,
well, one of the things that occurred to me, actually, in listening to some of the testimony about this was I was reminded of what Justice Newman said to me once when he said, Kevin, you just might have to grow government. And I was thinking about what it would take to monitor all of this, given we have so much to monitor. And yet I feel for people who have multiple outages. And if it's an annual report that somebody has to pour through to find the problem, I'm quite certain Mr. Garper will call us before we get through the annual report. And so I do want to make sure that there's some mechanism that's both not overly burdensome but also responsive to the ratepayer.
I agree. And, you know, one of the things the commission's doing right now is working through all of its policies, its internal policies to the agency. And what surprised us as we've gone through that is we have these peculiar policies that really aren't even explainable in some cases. And it's because they've been developed when one occurrence occurred sometime 20 years ago. So I hope we don't get overreactive. But on the other hand, we need to make sure that there aren't any more Larry Goppers in the future. And if we're expected to go out and watch the people replacing cable or investigating cable, you're right. We need a lot of government. I don't think that's a very good solution. We have customer complaints that tip us off. We've got Dave's reports that come to us via email. We've got a policy in place. If we'd require, they have a policy, a good policy, not a replacement of perfectly good cable because the 20 years or 40 years or whatever you use is up, but because there's been two faults or in some cases three faults in a half loop, whatever that is.
With that, I guess I would just thank you for your testimony and then reiterate or emphasize appreciation for your skepticism of monitoring the Environmental Protection Agency's power sector rules pilot project to ensure that it's a collaborative and not a conspiracy. Thank you.
It's very easy to monitor. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has the minutes, the agenda, the PowerPoint presentations online, and that will add to your skepticism.
Well, that's not very encouraging, but thank you.
Any further questions from the commission? Commissioner Cobb.
Thank you, Mike, for your testimony. Always candid. I appreciate that. Not to assume the other people's wasn't candid. But the in your discussion back and forth with the company, how much discussion, if any, did you have about the pensions of retired employees, pay raises for people? Did that come out at all, any of the discussion? Or is that any of your 85% things that you asked for and got?
The short answer is I did not, as a negotiator, get involved in pay raises and incentive comp plans. If you've looked at McGarry's testimony, you know, those are the issues that we found and raised. And of everything except ROE, we agreed to 85%
okay.
of our adjustments.
On the you just talked about the outside consultants. How much value would you put on having them available for you? I mean, is it just make it that much? Is it 50% easier, a whole bunch easier? How much easier is it to do these cases? How much of a better job do you do by having these outside consultants?
Well, Commissioner Kalk, we used to do our own rate cases, but they'd only roll around every 3 or 4 or 5, 10 years. You know, we could handle that. But between the ADP applications, the siting work that's going on, you know, the rate cases that are being filed, siting, there's just no way that internal staff can even do a reasonable job. And so I'm very thankful that we have a mechanism where we can spend $100,000, $125,000. In this case, we'll probably spend close to $200,000. But it's very helpful. We couldn't get our work done, I don't think, without it. We would. It just wouldn't be the level of work that the commission has grown accustomed to.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Just one last question, and this ties back to maybe Laura's question for Laura, is that you said that the NSP agreed to add a tree trimming crew. I wonder if that – I have to clarify the numbers. When I was talking, number of employees for 8 for mine, I guess. So there are people being added in Fargo. Just maybe I didn't define them the right way, if you will.
I don't think – well, I would say this, that there – I I guess they'd have to answer this, sure. But my understanding is that those probably would not be full-time employees, but maybe they are. I don't know.
Okay.
I guess NSP would have to take the stand and answer that, but I was thinking it would be more of a contract service kind of thing, but either way, there's going to be a couple more people working.
You know? Okay.
All right. Either way. I mean.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Further questions from the commission? Follow up, Mr. Grumman.
Now attending.
No, Your Honor.
Larry Gopper.
Mr. Loftus.
Sorry, Your Honor. We have no follow-up. Thank you.
Ms. Jeff Gotsack.
What about your opinion on the slightly revised proposal of the – specifically, you did talk a little bit about the reporting, but about the credit or the no credit or the ratepayers don't pay.
Well, I guess what I heard from Laura was that we're willing to eat the $20,000, and that's what I was replying to Kevin there. We'll take it. What was the other part of the
– That's really it. I didn't know if you had a preference of the three options.
I prefer my option or my.
Okay, and the reason then I'm trying to get out which is the, you know, which one has the most substantial basis to do.
Sure. Well, they have a policy in place right now, and their witness has already talked about it. I have a copy of it right here in front of me. To me, that is a very smart way to replace cable, and very efficient, cost effective. To me, let's build on that then. And the way you build on that is, okay, you have this guideline. What are you doing about it? I mean, are you saying, yeah, we had two cable faults and we got around to replacing it 3.5 years later? I don't know what the answer is there. I'm just giving that as a wild, scenario. But I think rather than create something new or different, let's just build on something that's already good.
That's all. Thank you.
Follow up from the commission. Commissioner Kramer?
Well, let's build on it right now then, Mike. Because I think, if I understand, and I don't disagree, that the policy's a good one. But the scenario that you just articulated wasn't just flying by the seat of your pants. I suspect there's some suspicion in that, and maybe 3.5 is too much. But what seems to me to be the real issue isn't whether they have a good policy or not. It's whether they implement that policy, and if they're not implementing, is anybody enforcing it? And it gets back to my statement earlier about growing government. How are we going to monitor that? And furthermore, is there a way to put as a stipulation in the settlement agreement a discipline, an enforcement discipline that gives a little more teeth to it? Because quite honestly, we all know, and Commissioner Kalk has certainly alluded to it a number of times today, when these hearings are said and done, it's kind of, you know, we don't really have much leverage anymore with these companies.
I don't know what the legal process is for accomplishing what you're talking about, but we certainly, as two and three parties, I would think that we could get together and figure out a resolution that would be agreeable to everyone, hopefully, and submit it to the commission. I don't know how that takes place, but...
Well, we're sending signals, aren't we?
Yeah.
Thank you. I have nothing else.
Further questions from the commission? Mr. Grumman, follow up.
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Loftus.
We have none, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeff Gotsacko.
None, thanks.
Thank you very much, Mr. Diller.
Thank you.
Mr. Grumman.
Well, Your Honor, unless there are any questions for our experts, Mr. McGarry or Mr. Berry, that concludes the advocacy staff's case in chief.
I should ask for the record, I suppose, commissioners, is there any request for... examination of the other witnesses for advocacy staff?
I would just have a general question for it. Doesn't whoever happens to be queued up next?
Which
there,
one is
there? There is no one.
There
is commissioner.
So we didn't have. Who's the 130 witness going to post?
Oh, that's Mr. Galper.
Okay. No, that's fine.
I'm fine.
Okay. The answer is no, Mr. Gruen. Nothing further from advocacy staff?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
I take it Commission Advisory Council has nothing for the record at this point?
That's correct.
All right. Mr. Loftus, have you got any rebuttal at this point? I'm assuming that no.
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right, then let me just ask for the record whether there is anyone present in the hearing room, any member of the public who wishes to address the commission concerning this matter. There being none, Mr. Galper, I believe that you are online. Can you hear me, sir?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Mr. Galper,
I can hear you.
This is a time when you can... tell the commission what they think, what you think they should know about this business. When you can, in effect, as we have discussed, offer your testimony to the commission. Let me ask you first, Mr. Galper, just to state your name for the record.
Larry L. Gopper, G-A-U-P-E-R.
And Mr. Gopper, what is your residence address?
621 Hackberry Drive South, Fargo, North Dakota, 58104.
And is your residence address, Mr. Galper, the same as your post office address?
That's correct.
Yes. Mr. Galper, as I recall discussing with you, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or both. Being advised of perjury, Mr. Gopper, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do, sir.
You may, Mr. Galper, proceed to address the commission.
Thank you, Judge. I've enjoyed watching the hearing this morning, through most of the morning, and I'm encouraged by some of the comments I've been hearing. I'm going to give my testimony here as I prepared it initially. However, I've made a number of small changes to it. The first one, I want to apologize to Commissioner Brian Kalk. In my printed testimony or document, I believe he had this morning, I addressed Commission Chairman Tony Clark, Kevin Kramer, and Commissioner Kevin Kramer the second time. So I want to, no oversight there on Commissioner Kalk. I wanted to apologize for that. I asked the North Dakota Public Service Commission to make two stipulations as partly you've discussed this morning in granting the current rate increase being requested by Xcel Energy. Number one, adopt a regulatory requirement that all electrical power outages involving more than 25 homes be reported to the PSC along with the reason for the failure. Monitoring of this record and periodic analysis should be made an official duty of the PSC. Number two, Xcel Energy and all power companies operating in North Dakota should be required to have a plan for scheduled replacement of underground cable to prevent failures caused by aging. Regarding my first request, at present, it seems reporting of electrical failures by power companies is done on a non-mandatory, almost anecdotal basis. If a large outage does occur, such as the February 2011 failure involving over 16,000 Xcel customers in the Fargo area in excess of 12 hours, I believe the PSC does ask the company to...
Now departing.
Or a voluntary report may be filed by the company. However, when outages involving fewer numbers of customers occur, there seems to be no requirement for the company to report those failures to the PSC and give a reason. This non-reporting situation makes it virtually impossible to determine patterns of outages and their causes. Now, the aggregate or cumulative reporting of failures I've heard talked about this morning does not present useful analyses of problems for the company, the PSC, or the consumer. In watching the proceedings this morning, I noticed the company seems to be putting a lot of the blame on Fargo outages on flooding. Now, bear in mind that Xcel's most widespread outage, affecting those 16,000 customers for over 12 hours, happened way ahead of any flooding problems in Fargo. I also question how the entire power grid in Fargo and the surrounding area is structured. Again, on a beautiful spring day, a large segment of downtown Fargo lost power, and the company stated through the media that it was caused by a company failure in Dilworth. That's east of Moorhead, Minnesota. The company told me that the failure in February of this year, which I believe was a record for Xcel, was caused by a substation failure on the western edge of the city in or near West Fargo, and I live at the eastern edge of the city, the Harwood Groves neighborhood. This causes me to wonder how fragile the Xcel grid is in the Fargo area. Now, as I said, I live in the Harwood Groves neighborhood on the south side of Fargo, well within the city limits, in an area that I consider to be in the heart of Xcel Energy's service territory. Our neighborhood not only experiences failures that encompass larger portions of the city, but in addition, we have endured numerous outages affecting the approximately 100 homes in our neighborhood, and this has been acknowledged to a certain degree by the company. It is difficult for the consumer to know the exact cause of these neighborhood failures because there is no requirement for the company to report them to the PSC. We can only go by what the company is telling us with no means of independent verification. This, to me, is inexcusable in regulating a monopoly that is supposed to be controlled. I am glad to hear the company's representative, I believe it was Mr. LaMosche, say that the company has a special plan for the Harwood Groves area. I look forward to experiencing the results of that effort. Regarding my second request, Xcel and all power companies doing business in the state should be required to have a plan of preventative replacement of underground cable. I can't tell you how many times the term underground fault has been given as the reason for a power failure in our neighborhood. I recently asked an Xcel lineman who was called out on, unfortunately, a sunny afternoon to repair what he told me was old underground. There was no weather problem. There was no rain or wind or blizzard or flood. The cable died of old age. Xcel's preventative maintenance program for underground cable is apparently use it until it fails. And I heard the description this morning about the, or this afternoon, about the two outages and then replace. To me, as a consumer who depends on continual electrical service, this is unacceptable. Age and failure records for all outages should be kept and automatically filed with the PSC. Computers keep track of things very well. These could be put into a computer file that could be massaged by one of the consultants that the PSC hires. From these reports, problem threads can be noted and addressed so failures are not redundant, as has been the case with underground faults in our neighborhood. Xcel and all companies should have a plan in place to replace sections of underground cable on a periodic, scheduled, preventative basis. Waiting until it fails is not a maintenance program. To me, it's negligence, and the PSC should demand that it be corrected. I don't have to tell you or any power company how critical reliability is. We have enough weather-related problems in North Dakota that can cause widespread and serious outages not controlled or by the company at all. That's why it's doubly important that any failure that can be prevented by effective design and conscientious maintenance should be addressed on a continual basis. I want Xcel and all power companies in North Dakota to succeed. I can't simply go to another provider if I feel my present company is not doing the job the way it should be. I also have the greatest respect and gratitude for the technicians who are called out at any time, 24/7, in some of our worst weather to restore power. However, some of our longest and most widespread outages, and most of those that have plagued our neighborhood and our community, have not been caused by Mother Nature. These failures happen during some of our best weather, and that's why I question the design, management, and preventative maintenance policies of my provider, Xcel Energy. In the interest of reliability, I am asking the PSC to adopt the stipulations I've requested, and I thank you very much for this opportunity to address my concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Galper. And now, counsel and the commissioners may have questions for you.
Sure.
Mr. Loftus?
Sorry. Thank you, Your Honor. I have no questions for Mr. Galper.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
No questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Just a couple, and Mr. Galper, thank you for your testimony. It was very thoughtful, as well as your submitted testimony beforehand.
Thank you.
It sounds like you were able to listen in, I suspect, on the Internet earlier today to some of the previous testimony.
That's correct. I appreciate that.
Some of these things were covered, and at least some Xcel responses were covered, and I'd be curious in your thoughts about their response. First, to the issue of reporting outages, they've suggested that rather than reporting outages that affect more than 25 homes, that might create too much data, almost static, that would be tough to decipher for the commission what's meaningful and what's not in identifying trends. They've suggested this identifying all consumers who have had six or more, what they define as extended outages, 5 minute or more outages throughout the course of the year as an alternative. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes, I do, and I heard that portion. I was gone for about an hour and a half over the noon hour, but I heard that portion a few minutes ago about the two outages and then replace, and also that strict adherence to that policy, follow-up. Good to have the policy, but good to follow up. I think that would have prevented, as someone mentioned on the panel there, that would have probably negated some of my communication with Xcel and the commission. My problem here has to do, I understand that's a lot of reporting, but computers do keep track of things. And what I'm saying is that when they determine what the cause was, say, of an outage in our neighborhood, and it affected 25 or more homes, and I picked that number arbitrarily. We have about 100 homes. So when that is filed with the company by somebody, and somebody at Xcel must put into a computer, this happened, and that was the cause. If that was transmitted periodically to the Public Service Commission and kept in a computer file there, then an analysis could point to something. An analysis could be massaged to say, well, what's causing, we're seeing an awful lot of underground outages here, or we're seeing this kind of outage, or there's squirrels out there. I mean, somebody would know something about the pattern. And I realize that reporting six or more, but to me, six or more outages starts to be prohibitive. That shouldn't be. And particularly, if it goes back to one cause, and that's what a report of all detailed report of all of the outages would point to, and that would help, I think, in determining what they should do with that situation.
Okay. The and then with regard to your second point regarding a plan for Xcel and other utilities for underground replacement. There was some testimony, I think, both from Mr. Diller of the advocacy staff as well as Xcel testimony that discussed the need to for the commission to try to weigh some of the decisions with regard to when utility plants should be replaced, and some concern that sometimes age isn't necessarily the determining factor, and that if it was a age-based requirement, for example, you could be taking out lots of very useful plant at a cost that would be expensive for consumers. Did you hear that testimony, or maybe your suggestion
is... I heard part of that. I think someone said that bad cable, and then the determination of that cable is made, whether it should be replaced. The problem is if one segment starts to go in, like our neighborhood, as has happened, because of underground failure, and then 6 months later another one goes, that's kind of an indication to the layman here that we may have a problem with cable all throughout the neighborhood. And I realize the company cannot replace all of that cable at once. I mean, that would be terribly expensive. What I was thinking was, what would be wrong with having a plan that says, we see some failures here because of age, and because of what we've talked to the manufacturer about as far as life expectancy of that cable, and a good manufacturer should be able to estimate that, saying, well, it's been in there 25, 30 years. Let's start replacing anything that we haven't replaced in the last 5 years or whatever, and then go through the neighborhood and replace those on a preventative basis. That's my argument in terms of this waiting till it fails policy. That's what I would suggest.
Sure. Okay. Were you able to listen to any of the testimony regarding the smart grid switches, the IntelliTeam switches earlier?
I heard part of that, and I didn't quite understand it. I'm kind of out of my element here, as I'm sure XL would agree. I heard part of it, but I didn't quite understand that.
Okay, sure. I think the idea being that faults, perhaps underground faults, but other faults might be able to be more quickly identified and then sort of sealed off from the rest of the system so that it wouldn't cause wider scale outages like across town like you had talked about. And I didn't know if you had any reaction to that or not.
Yes, I applaud that. I mean, if that is what it would do in terms of, it seems like, as I pointed out in my testimony, if you have a fault in Dilworth, it really shouldn't shut off businesses and traffic lights and everything else in downtown Fargo. The other part of it is like Christmas tree lights, I mean, of the old kind. And the other piece is West Fargo, out in that area. When I met with engineers from Xcel here in Fargo, and they were gracious enough to have me up after that big outage because I was concerned, and that was a West Fargo or far western end of the city substation, but it knocked out 16,000 homes or more and businesses all afternoon, and it started on a nice afternoon. They claim that will never happen again, at least in the lifetime of the gentleman who was running Xcel in, engineering in Fargo at the time we talked, and hopefully it won't. But that's a serious problem, and I think the cause of that specifically should be reported to the PSC. And somebody who is a consultant of an independent nature, as the PSC hires from time to time, ought to look at that and say, you know, the company's correct on this, or they're incorrect. They found the reason this won't happen again because of this. I guess what I'm getting at is it shouldn't affect such a widespread area, including our neighborhood, when it happens so far away. And I know that has to do with the grid. And I know grids are interconnected nationally and all of that, but I'm talking about our immediate area.
Sure. Well, thanks. And Larry, thanks again. Of course, the commission doesn't make any decisions today, so
sure.
Take it all under advisement. One of the things that does cross my mind, especially with regard to your suggestions regarding reporting of service quality issues, basically, which I'll sort of categorize as a little bit broader issue, service outages, service quality, that that's something we deal with all utilities, and of course this case only affects XL, but it may be worthy of future consideration for the commission in a rulemaking, which is something that would affect all utility companies, and we might want a more systematic process for outage reporting to the commission so that we can make comparisons not only within utilities but across them. So I thank you for your comments.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate very much the opportunity. Part of my purpose in spending the time with this and talking to the company and the PSC has been satisfied in the sense that I realize the company seems to be very concerned at this point about this problem, selfishly with our neighborhood, I suspect there'll be a close look at this, and they're doing that. But I'm interested in what they're interested in. I'm interested in what the PSC is interested in. I'm interested in reliability. And any data analysis, any data that can be collected and then analyzed and massaged to determine patterns, that is what I really think is being looked at, and I hopefully something can be come up with.
Are there any further questions from the commission? Commissioner Calk.
Thank you very much for testifying. I just have a couple of procedural questions, I guess, is that we, you know, the company and the PSC, we have, you know, public input sessions prior to the hearing today. And I'm very glad we had your testimony today. But at what point did you actually hear that there's a rate case going on and get engaged in the process? Because you agree, great points today, but I don't recall anybody testifying in the public input sessions in the Fargo area. I can't remember. I don't think there wasn't.
I understand that, Commissioner. I read
and that's,
about
that's
the
our job
input.
To get it out there. But when did you get engaged? When did you hear about this?
Well, I've been engaged with XL for about 14 years since I moved into the neighborhood. But I did hear about those public input sessions. I had been in communication with the company locally, and I had a conflict the day that the one at NDSU was going to be held. I believe it was up at the NDSU.
Now departing.
Ann Bulkley, Concentric.
Couldn't make that one. And I thought, well, I think I've made some points about my concerns to Excel. But then as I started to look at this a little bit more, I've been sending some emails out about the underground cable. And staff out there alerted me to the fact there is this hearing coming up, and probably to get it in the record, my concerns, it would be a good idea to testify, and that's what I'm doing.
Okay, great. I'm trying to get a, you explain in general terms where you're at. Can you walk me through a little bit closer to some landmarks where you're at in South Fargo? I'm trying
sure.
to get a...
Harwood Groves is about a 25-year-old neighborhood, which is located on South University Drive in Fargo. It's east of us on University at 35th Avenue is Quartz Plus.
Oh, sure. Okay.
And the
I know exactly
new Waterford
right
Complex. Yeah, the new Waterford Complex is just to the east, our eastern entrance to Harwood Groves.
Okay.
Does
then,
that help?
Sure does. I know exactly what you're talking about now. Because the so when you have questions, I mean, so have you had any problems with, you know, their customer service or the line when they come out? It sounds like they've been all very, very good, but I just, you know, in general, has that been very responsive to your needs?
Yes. yes, to answer your question with the yes, no, yes. I would say that they are very diligent in getting out here and getting us, and during the flood, which we had no problems with, testifies to their preparations for the flood. And for their diligence during the flood to keep things going. Their linemen and their technicians, as I say, are excellent, and I really applaud them for all what they have to go out into. But what I'm trying to do is trying to get those people sitting in the meeting rooms and the drawing boards and at the computers in Minneapolis and other places, Fargo, to kind of solve these problems so those guys and gals don't have to come out. That's ultimately my goal.
Okay, thank you very much.
The service has been good, yeah.
Further questions from the Commissioner Kramer.
Thank you, Larry, for your testimony and for your engagement. And I think that you entered into the case very nicely, quite honestly. In fact,
thank you very much. I appreciate that, and the representatives of the company.
As you... probably know that the reliability issue was an issue that was raised by the commission, you know, maybe even before the filing of the rate case, as I recall, relating more to the grid, as you call it, that the larger community, those that hopefully these switches will alleviate that. The bulk of that is the insulation of an outage to a more confined area and identification of where the problem is, and then the redundancy to keep most of the lights on. Your situation, however, is a little bit different as it relates to more neighborhood, especially specific to underground cable. And you had mentioned or you had stated that you want the same thing the commission wants and the same thing the company wants, and that is reliability. And you are correct in that statement. However, I would add to it that while we want reliability, we also want it at an appropriate cost to consumers. And so as we go forward, just know that you're speaking to our heartbeat, but at the same time, 100% reliability is impossible, and if we can get to 99%, but it's cost prohibitive, you might have to settle for 98%. Does that sound...
Well, that's correct. I mean, I don't disagree with that, and I'm a practical guy myself. Budget-wise, I'm retired and so forth, so that I understand the cost thing. But at the same time, if I'm hearing the testimony correctly out there, what the bits I heard, that after two failures, things should be replaced, and sometimes that's not done. As someone on the commission alluded to, that the policy should be followed. And I think that's important. That shouldn't be more costly than the usual maintenance that's done. If our underground is failing out here, maybe there was something wrong with the design, the way that with the system was designed for our neighborhood. And what I'm saying to Xcel, and they seem to be agreeing with me that they're looking at this as a special design situation, that maybe something wasn't done. 14 years ago, I was in a similar situation with a lot of Xcel outages, and they told me they were putting in a new 270,000-volt feeder line or something like that, and I'm beyond my knowledge here. But they told me they were doing some of that. Well, we go for a while, it's fine. Then all of a sudden, here come those failures, and they're extremely frustrating. So I understand they have to balance the cost with the performance, but I would like them to be just a little, I'd like them to be more diligent on looking at the thing, not from just how do we spend more money, but have we got the stuff replaced periodically that we need to replace and keep up to date?
Well, you've certainly provided a good case study for us, and oftentimes that is what precipitates a better policy, as Commissioner Clark referred to, that might be become a rule, as a matter of fact, just because it probably provides some good best practices. So I appreciate your allowing yourself and your neighborhood to be this case study. I have nothing further.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Any further questions from the commission? Follow-up, Mr. Loftus?
Your Honor, the company has no follow-up questions. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
Nothing, thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Galper.
You're welcome.
You're welcome to stay on the line, of course, or you may, as you wish, leave at this time.
Yes, and I'll watch you on the streaming, so appreciate that. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Loftus, any rebuttal to Mr. Galper?
Now departing.
Larry Galper?
Your Honor, we have no rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Grumman?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco? I really shouldn't describe it as a rebuttal. Anything further with regard to Mr. Galper's testimony? All right.
Yep.
Very good. Commissioners, your closing statements. Commissioner Clark?
Just thank you to everyone for a good hearing. I think we were able to develop the record, which is what we always try to do at these things, so that the commission has an ability to make decisions at the end of the day. So thank you, and safe travels back to Minneapolis or wherever you may be from.
Commissioner Kramer.
Just the same. Thank you, everybody, for job well done, good presentation, efficiently executed, I might add. I appreciate that. And good job to the staff as well. Very well done. Thank you.
Commissioner Koch.
Just echo the same. Thank you all for your work. And we have a commission meeting next week, I believe, so I'm sure we'll put this on scheduling as soon as we can to have some type of work session. So thank you all very much.
One more time. Anything further for the record, Mr. Loftus?
Your Honor, no, thank you.
Mr. Grumman, anything further for the record?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, anything further for the record?
No.
Accordingly, the record for this consolidated hearing for the North Dakota Public Service cases number PU-10-657, PU-11-55, and PU-11-557 is closed. Thank you very much, counsel.
Now departing.
Michael McGarry.